All right, guys, so welcome to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palette. My special guests this week, as you are about to enjoy, are the director and executive producer of my new show on Somm TV called Crush. If you still don't have a gift for your favorite wine lover or a gift for yourself, now's the time to get your subscription for only $49.99 on SommTV.com. I mean, where else are you going to watch Crush? And if you like me and this podcast, you're absolutely going to love that show. So go to SommTV.com and get your subscription now. All right, guys. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palette. I am over the moon excited about the two incredibly inspiring and dynamic women joining me today. If you guys follow my social and you follow Somm TV, which I know you do, you saw that the trailer for the documentary that I did, Crush, came out, and I'm super excited about it. And today we have Christina Wise and Diane Carpenter, the women behind the vision and everything magical that you're going to see. Ladies, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Really wish we could do this in person, Shakira and Christina.
I know. Look, we had such a great time. Diane, you said that we have to make it like an annual retreat for us. We had such a great time together in Sonoma.
Shakira, I hope your passport is not expiring because we're going to be taking you on an airplane as soon as this COVID crisis is over.
I can't wait. I'm beyond excited. All right, so let's talk about Crush. So for anyone that hasn't seen the trailer yet, Crush is really the story of how these grapes, that's the sound of me pouring champagne, how these grapes go from hanging on a vine to your table. Talk to us a little bit about what inspired the idea for this.
So when I was harvesting for my first time at the Paul Hobbs Winery in Sebastopol, California, I was working with a whole bunch of interns who were half my age, by the way. And one intern, she was from Australia, and her job at that time was managing a crush facility. And I was like, oh, okay, crush facility. Like, I knew what it was, and I had no idea what it was. But it just so happened that a couple of days after we had this conversation, we went to Paul Hobbs' other second winery, which is called Cross Barn, and they crush in a warehouse. And I realized what it was at that point and knew exactly what a crush facility was, because it basically is a facility which houses all of the equipment that you need to make wine, except for the barrels. You bring in the barrels yourselves, and they don't have bottling machines usually either. Those come in also later on specific bottling days. But it was very clear to me at that point, oh, I get it. And I thought to myself, well, this isn't very glamorous.
but it's not glamorous.
Apparently, you know, 2/3 of the winemakers out there, this is how they make wine. They make them in these warehouses. And it's the most frugal way for them to make wine. You know, basically, I think this is a message that we need to tell the consumer out there. That is, you know, most wineries don't have a lot of money. And this is how they make wine. And we need to support them because, you know, their livelihood, their heart and soul goes into making wine this way. And just because they don't have a fancy winery, it doesn't mean that they are not doing a great job, because we know they are doing a great job. So when Christina and I were discussing the project, and I was so happy that she was on the same page as me, and we really wanted to work together, and I, you know, we saw this as an opportunity, I turned to her and I said, you know who I think would be great? Shakira. She says, oh my God. And Christina said, it's great because we're bringing this woman out of Manhattan, and we're putting her in a vineyard, and this is something she's never done before.
Oh, I can't tell you what an honor it was from both of you and from the amazing people that we worked with. It is an honor
To be able to share and narrate a story. And I learned so much. I too did not realize how many people, you know, because a lot of people, you know, when you go and visit wine country, you assume that every wine made has this beautiful tasting room and all of this stuff. And that simply isn't true. A lot of the dirty work is not happening, you know, at a winery that you see from the car. So it was fascinating to see, you know, a barrel room with multiple wines being made in there and all of that. Christina, so Diane brings this idea to you. What did you think?
Well, I loved the idea because I've seen a little bit of it, the process. And obviously we have some harvest episodes which show, you know, but they're shorter and they're not hosted. There's not somebody actually getting in and maybe asking those questions. And what I love is that kind of like fish out of water and putting somebody in a new situation, because that's how you learn about wine. If you don't understand something or don't know the process, you can ask the questions there. So somebody might have been able to watch a harvest on Psalm TV, but have questions and really not like have the ability to ask anybody. So I figure if we met Shakira in that situation, she will ask those questions and she will learn and maybe answer some things for others. And then it's also, it's a fun process, but I think it's not been shown in the actually in the right way or in the way that it's like, you know, everybody has the I Love Lucy stomping on the grapes kind of image in their head. And it's not that. So I think it was really fun to kind of to show how it's done.
Yeah.
Step by step.
I'm telling you, if I knew that being a Y kid would one day get me opportunities as opposed to just getting me in trouble. But I think that is something that, you know, the wine world, it's something that it needs to overcome with people that are new to the world. You know, there's a lot of apprehension behind asking a question. And there's no other way that anyone, like no one's born with wine knowledge, right? Everything that you ever know about wine is something you learn, something you expose to, a question that you have that someone was willing to answer for you. So I was more than happy to be the one like, what's that? Why are we doing that? What's this do? You know, the family of Flambeau was so, so generous and gracious with their time and their patience and everything. I can't wait for people to learn so much from it. What in developing the idea and how you wanted to frame it, because there's a lot that happens. I mean, picking starts at the crack of dawn. No, it doesn't. It starts before the crack of dawn. And it's a long day. There's a lot. How did you guys kind of draw a framework for like, okay, how are we going to capture all of this without being too drawn out or too long or anything like that? What was the creative process there?
I think for that, I mean, thankfully, it's a pretty natural process.
Okay.
In that, you know, you pick the grapes and then the grapes go to the facility. And so it has to go through, like anything procedural is pretty easy to kind of like take in. I think when crafting the story, there is a lot more because there are different barrels of wine and there are different people and there's different people at different stages within harvest. Mm-hmm. And even for Art and the Murrays, you know, some of their grapes had come in earlier before. So you can't really catch every moment, but you could catch that day and then kind of hit on the other things going around that process, which I think, you know, pulling in all the smoke. When we were planning this episode and working on this, that was not going to be part of the storyline, but it's something that every winemaker was dealing with at the time. And the Murrays are a wonderful, adorable family. I love that the kids got involved. And we wanted to show something fun and upbeat and the harvest, but then there was also kind of this other side of it and pulling in what's actually happening in Sonoma at that time.
It was amazing. I mean, first of all, the amount of stereotypes that go into women never being able to get ready on time and all that, they should have had a camera crew filming us because I live for punctuality and so do the two of you. Yes. And there was, you know, I think that when you're telling a story and even when you watch a movie, you can see a film or a project come together where like everyone believes in it, right? Because it's a film that you watch and you see like setting is right. The shots are right. The people are right. And that was the energy that I got. I don't think you could have picked a better family than the Murrays. They were so amazing, so warm, so welcoming. And I think that they really captured the soul of what a lot of these smaller wineries and winemakers are like, where they're just a family that have fallen in love with this process and doing this. And I think that people will really feel that when they watch this. How did you guys come to pick Flambeau as the winery that you'd feature?
So the first time I met Art Murray was typical COVID times, was on a Zoom conference call with Grand Cru Custom Crush, where we were all crushing. We were having a group meeting about the crisis. And Art had a lot to say. And I noticed on that Zoom call that he was very charismatic. And we were kind of all trying to figure out how to keep our brands going, keep them alive, and how we could work together. And just kind of, I think, being supportive as a whole. And I brought up the idea and I said, you know, I have this passion project in mind and it's called Crush. And this is something where I might be able to, with our production company, we might be able to include, you know, the crush facility. And I just want to throw that out there. We're just at the early stages of talking about it. So that was brief. We moved on. We continued our conversation. And about 1 hour after the call, Art's PR person, she contacted me via email, introduced herself. And I thought that was so proactive. So a couple of things happened that day. I met Art Murray and I met his PR person, who was very proactive. And eventually I started chatting with Art and getting to know him a little bit better. And, you know, one thing led to another. We started talking about this production, and Art was very excited about being part of the production. And it's really good to get to know your cast members a little bit. You know, they can loosen up and, you know, become more familiar. And it's easy with Art. And you'll see in Crush, the Murray family are just spectacular. They really, really are salt of the earth, friendly, exactly who we're looking to work with.
Wow, that is, and say Art is one of the most charismatic and genuinely fun people I've ever met. And you're so right about their family. I mean, I could have sat with them for hours. They are all, you know, lawyers, very committed to so many causes that matter mm-hmm. to the world. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're just a fun, I mean, we were with everyone. Kids, grandma, grandpa, dogs. Stella was the diva of the day. But I really think that they embody the spirit of what these smaller wineries are like, and also kind of what Sonoma is and Sonoma winemaking, because all too often, you know, people only see the Napa part of things and that's all they think of. And Sonoma and Healdsburg, like, they're such beautiful towns with beautiful people, amazing wines, warmth. Everyone is kind and generous and welcoming. And, you know, to see how many of them had lost their crops and lost so much to these fires, and still had this amazingly positive and upbeat and optimistic attitude towards everything. I think all of that got captured.
I feel like because they're from New Orleans, they've kind of, you know, they've been through so much with storms and hurricanes and natural disasters, but they still also have that fun. And I mean, I love New Orleans as a city. That's where Jason and I got engaged. So it's got a soft spot in my heart. And
another connection.
Yeah. But I just feel like they kind of brought that, like, you know, it's okay, we can get through it and have fun. And it's very family oriented. And it just, they were great. And they kind of took everything in stride, which was really nice to see a lot of positivity at that time.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, coming from New York, that was my first time traveling too. And seeing, you know, it's always different. And I think about that too when I talk to people from other places and you know, we talk about COVID and it's like, oh my God, you're in New York. And things are always a little bit like they're packaged for the news. So what you see on TV will have you thinking, oh my God, this entire place is on fire. I'm not going to be able to breathe. How's this going to work? And then you get there and you realize, like, this is just a bunch of really dedicated farmers and stewards, because I think that that's one of the beautiful things that the film captures, is that these people are really stewards of the land and of the crops that they have. And they're dedicated to giving us the best that that land has to offer. So, I mean, you both know Northern California quite well. Was there any talk between, like, specifically doing Sonoma versus Napa?
Well, definitely Sonoma, because, you know, this being a passion project for Christina and I, Sonoma is very dear to me. It's where we cultivated vineyard in 2016. It's changed my life. And I realized that Sonoma was kind of like Napa's little baby brother, you know, shy little baby brother mm-hmm. or little baby sister. And never really, sometimes it feels like it doesn't have a voice. And there's so much, there are so many spectacular wines that come out of Sonoma. When you're drinking Pinot Chardonnay from that area, typically they're being grown in Sonoma. They may be made at the wineries in Napa Valley, but those grapes are being sourced from Sonoma mostly. It's a beautiful place. It's very real. It's very rustic. It's hard because I love Napa and Sonoma very much, but it was time that we, you know, we started doing something, a story about a family-run winery in Sonoma.
You know, from Christina, you are a brilliant storyteller. And yet, I mean, literally, if ever, you can produce the Oscars and I wouldn't break a sweat, because you are so cool, calm, and collected on everything. You have a great way of, like, conveying an idea and a vision, but also just kind of letting things happen. Can you talk a little bit about your approach as a storyteller here and how you wanted to capture that without kind of giving a script and still capturing the very organic aspects of all of it?
Well, first, thank you. I've been a producer for many years, and I have worked in news, and I've worked in very intense situations with live events, and I've had the executives be yellers and screamers. And so I really see how that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't move anybody forward. People don't want to do their jobs better if you're yelling and screaming at them. And then going over to the other side, to the documentary world, it's really getting people to trust you, you know, and getting them to open up. And if you are pushing them around, have an attitude, if you're not calm on set, they're going to feel that too. And they're going to put their walls up. So the best way to work with people, whether they're on camera, behind the scenes, whatever, is to kind of create sort of like a family dynamic of just like, oh, let's talk about it. Let's discuss this. Well, how do you feel? What do you think? You know? And I think even like our crew, because it was a newer crew that we were working with, but even like they, by the end of the day, warmed up, were excited about it, got yeah. into the project. And that's kind of how you want to pull everybody in, because you want them to be, everybody to be proud of what they're doing. But then you also want the subjects to be able to trust you. You know, they don't.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of have that calm demeanor, I think, to get what you need. And then that also goes into the tone of the show.
Yeah.
You know, there's that underlying tone. And, you know, I watch a lot of reality. And if the producers are pushing like a Housewives to fight, you're going to see that tone there. You know, and so that's kind of the opposite of what we're going for. So we kind of have to be friendly and nice and happy and, you know, and then everybody kind of joins along. So it's pretty simple, just being nice human beings.
You're saying that in 2020, that it's nice to just be simple? I mean, it's simple to just be kind. I mean, what a Freudian slip. Yes, some people think that it's nice to be simpletons. But no, I think that everyone, you're right. I mean, even between takes, like we sat, we had jokes with the crew, like, you know, it was just so much synergy. And now I feel like I might be spoiled, like, oh, this is what it's like. And then gonna get slapped with reality one day. Like, no, it's not. That's just when Diane and Christina are in charge. It might be a little different if you got other people. But also, I mean, in addition to the Murrays, it was mind-blowingly amazing to be at a crush facility and see everything that is going on. And I feel like we were at the Ritz-Carlton of facilities because everything was so high-tech and scientific. And what I thought was, even in this very sterile, clean and uniform and structured environment, there was still so much soul. Everyone that you spoke to was still, you know, even little side conversations you heard, people are so passionate about making wine. People are smiling. People are friendly. The Crush facility is a unique place. And I'm wondering, you know, what, with so much technical things that you could get into, it was a beautiful combination of like, and people, you guys will see this when you watch the film, but there were the I Love Lucy moment where I was kind of like, oh shit, this is really happening. This is really fast. Jesus, these are a lot of grapes. and still, there's learning in all of that. It's so specific what you need to do. You need to put dry ice on the grapes and all of this stuff. So was there any, you know, you guys gave minimal directions. It was just kind of like, all right, let's do this. Did you just know that it would all fall together and that because it's such a kind of a step one, then step two process that it would just work out? Or I guess, what are some of the fears and how did you mitigate the movie not getting too technical?
Well, I can say that it was really helpful that Diane knows the process really well, you know? Having her there to kind of say, yeah, let's do this. Let's not do this. This is what we do next. This is all the important things that, you know, I had that as just like, okay, this is, you know, I have confidence now in saying, let's do this. And like, normally I don't probably think we would have filmed like the grape testing.
Ah, okay.
But with the smoke and everything, like that was one thing. I mean, I know that they test the grapes every time that they harvest, but I didn't know, but it became more important with the smoke and all of that. But yeah, Diane was able to kind of like help guide everything. Here's where you need to go next. And because she's been through it.
Yeah.
This really had to run very smoothly. So Grant and Crew Crush were amazing. They helped us kind of orchestrate the whole day. And by doing that, in part, we felt like we had the facility to ourselves. And part of that was because a lot of people were having to reject their fruit. But another part of that was because Grand Cru and Flambeau and the Murray family really helped kind of like the process run very smoothly for us. And we had a couple of occasions where we had to stop filming because there was some kind of interaction in the winery, but primarily in the barrel room, because the temperature control in the barrel room is pretty loud and it goes off, I would say, it's probably every 5 minutes, but it felt like every 10 seconds.
That was a funny part.
How many times did we have to record that? The temperature control would go off really loud. We'd have to start over. I think there were more takes in the barrel room than anywhere.
That was really fun. It was like every time I inhaled to start talking, I'm like, I have hot breath.
And I think in the edit, people won't even notice.
Oh, well, that's good. I was starting to think I had hot breath. Like every time I started talking, the coolers would kick on. Like, man, I'm talking the truth. I'm not talking hot wind. I mean, also, you know, I think that there's always, you know, you want to always showcase that talent is talent, skill is skill, and it's not tied to a gender or a race or anything like that. But there's tremendous value and tremendous, I don't know, like a sense of pride to work on something like this with all women. And, you know, both of you have been integral in a lot of the Somme, like all the creation of Somme TV and Somme Films as it exists today. Is this something that you both always wanted to do, that like you wanted to direct? I mean, Christina, you've been a producer before, and Diane, you have your own wine, so you're actually doing this too, but was producing and actually creating a project on your own, was that always something you wanted to do?
Yeah. I mean, I always tell Jason, because, you know, he's our director, and I was a producer for many years, but when I would produce my shoots, I didn't have a director. So essentially, I was filling two shoes at once. So, you know, for me, Jason was like, oh, this is your first directing credit. I'm like, is it though? Like, because I've done this for so long that it was just kind of, it wasn't something that was like out of my realm of like what I've normally done. Now, doing something that is very female-led, female-focused, you know, obviously the Murray family is, I like family stories just because, like, I feel like, well, Jason and I work together, so we are husband and wife team. We've got two kids that are usually always interrupting our work, so I feel like they're always around. So I love the family story. But then, you know, we had a female DP, we have a female editor. So, but I think that sometimes women can be underrepresented in some of the bigger categories within film and television. I mean, there are definitely those that have credit. I think there's a lot of us. It has changed a lot since when I first started in television. So I love that this show really highlights a lot of women behind the scenes. And I think that's something you can focus on because they have wonderful talent. And I think women kind of have an innate sense of timing, sense of story. I think women make better editors than men. there's many things that women do really well and that, like, you know, they can keep things organized on track. And not to say that, like, every man can't do that or every woman can do that, but there are certain things. Like, I know in my life, just getting two kids out the door and then keeping work organized, it's very, like, timely, and that's how you run a set. So, you know, for me, this is kind of like a natural thing to do. It wasn't that hard. I just don't spend as much time in the field as I have in the past, but it's kind of like getting back on a bike. And I'm not in the field as much just because I had two kids, and now they're four and they're almost eight. So it's, I can kind of go back and do a little bit of what I was doing before I had kids, when it was so hard to organize childcare and whatnot. So it was really fun for me to be able to focus on something. And that's another thing I think in these COVID times, like, I am so split between being a mom and working. And so I think it was great for me to be able to get out there and just focus on work and to do something that I love and something I don't get to do as much.
Yeah.
And it just was like a great, like, sense of peace as I really enjoyed it and being with you lovely women and really, like, just focusing on one thing, which I feel like is not something I can do anymore, was so awesome. And, you know, and hopefully produce good results because I was able to do that. So
I know you produce good results, but it was beautiful to see you in your element because, I mean, it didn't seem to me like you took a day off. I mean, you were just in the zone and on it, which was wonderful. Diane, you know, you came about this, that you're making wine, and that was kind of like that decision was kind of a rebirth for you as a woman for where you were in your life. And so you make this beautiful, elegant Provence style rosé that I love. I'm a big fan of these savory rosés. But your wine and making it was more of a passion project. It was a rebirth for you. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that I was actually a stay-at-home mom for a long time. And we had our girls very young. It just was a good time because we were moving back to London. I was in my young 20s. It was a great time to start a family. David was starting his career and we both decided to partner on this and we were going to, you know, support his career. I was going to raise the girls. It was the perfect time to do it. But, you know, that's because I hadn't started my career yet. So when the girls were getting older and they were teenagers, I started worrying about what's next. What am I going to do? I can't not do anything. I need something to do. What's that going to be? And my girls were not going to be my full-time job once, you know, they left for college. And that was just around the corner. And I tell people, I was quite literally saved by a glass of wine. And it was in 2004 we were at a restaurant here in Naples, Florida, and they had a really good wine program, which I realize now. We were out with friends, and this friend of mine said to me, "Oh, you need to try this Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon." He said, "You know, this winemaker is incredible. I've been reading a lot about him." I said, "Okay, let me try it." And I really thought, oh, I was going to hate it because, you know, I drank mostly white wine in those days. And I picked up this Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon, and I had an epiphany. In that moment, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know wine could taste so good. And I was like, I need to have more of this. So the sommelier, and I didn't really know what a sommelier was back then, the sommelier started, you know, pouring us other types of wine, especially from that region. I was like, this is great. I'm really enjoying this. So obviously that was a great sommelier. And I was like, I want to, you know, further pursue this because, you know, I felt very passionate about this in that moment. It also coincided with a time when my mom was dying. And it was a great distraction for me. It really was. And my mom, I remember she thought it was great that I, you know, that I found this passion because I started just taking some very basic classes in Chicago and I talked to her about it and she thought it's wonderful. I lost my mom a year later, but I continued the studies and we were living in Chicago at the time and we moved to New York City in 2010. And there were such great wine schools in New York City. And I really started to start studying for wine. And what you have to understand about me is I've never studied a day in my life. Never interested me. There was nothing I was particularly passionate about except art. I went to art school. And I was studying at the International Wine School in New York City for the WSET. And I got all the way to my diploma level. And at that point, I was like, I'm definitely going to go for the Master of Wine exam. I'm loving this. And then something happened. We had a family tragedy that took me off course. Mm. And it took me off course, you know, temporarily. But in that time, you know, I had already started harvesting in California, which brings me back to that first glass of wine. That first glass of wine was a Paul Hobbs Cabernet Sauvignon. And since then, Paul has become my friend, my mentor, and, you know, he's in our next song film and we've done a Verticals episode with him. He's been a great supporter of mine and he is the one that took me into the vineyards. He invited me to harvest with him for a couple of weeks in 2011 and I harvested with them on and off for 6 years after that point. And he took me into the vineyards and it was actually the Nathan Coombs Vineyard, which he was just bought and was replanting and planting for the first time. And I really fell in love with the winemaking, the viticultural and the vinification side of the wine world. And so I did a major pivot. I stopped. I got halfway through my diploma. I had to stop for a family tragedy. But I picked it up and I started going down the winemaking route. And I've never looked back. I have never looked back. And I realized that being in the outdoors and doing the winemaking side is much more for me. And so you know, I really, for a woman who I'm now in my mid-50s, I confess, I reinvented myself. And it took a lot of courage. I had a lot of support behind me. It took a lot of courage. And it feels good. And one of the reasons I think why Crush was important to me, not only was it especially to work with Christina, you know, we go back quite a ways now. We work together a lot. But the other one was it's kind of like a message. And it's a message primarily to myself to say that I can actually do this and, you know, make wine and be in this wine world. But also it's a message to women out there who are in my generation, who are like, what's next? What do I do? Or women coming up who choose to stay home, which is, trust me, it's a gift. If you're a parent and, you know, you're able to stay home and raise your family, it truly is a gift. But there is a what's next. What am I going to do? You put your career on hold. And I found my career when I was in my late 40s. And that's a message I want to send to a lot of women who are in their 40s or men in their 40s who have stayed home and, you know, they're wondering what to do. Your passion may not come until later on in your life, because that certainly happened to me, and I'm living proof, living, walking proof of that. And now it's in a bottle.
I love it. I mean, I love it. I am not in my 50s yet, but man, if I can look half as good as you do, I'd be a happy camper. But, you know, food and wine has always been something that was important to me, and I wanted to make it part of my life. But I mean, I just turned 39, and it's in the last 2 years, maybe, that this has really become a thing for me. And I've reached a point in life where I think I balance my two careers, and I'm able to pursue, you know, a profession that I love and a passion that I love. And that's a gift. And I think that, you know, in our own unique ways, the three of us just represent a rejection of this idea that there's an artificial timeline, or that anything looks the certain way it's supposed to, you know?
Absolutely.
That if you're a mom, you have to give up doing something, which is nonsense. You may have to pivot. You may have to adjust a little, but it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, sacrifice parts of you that make you you, and parts of you that you want to nurture and grow and continue to work on. And I take that. It's inspirational to surround myself with women like you both that continue to pursue things you love and are still wonderful mothers and wives and friends and all of those things.
By the way, we followed your career. And ever since, you know, you were on our radar at the Somme 3 premiere in New York City, and we all know why.
Yes.
And, but, you know, we knew in that moment as a production company, we're like, we need to watch this woman. She's quite something. There's something about her, and we have followed you, and we have watched you, and you are doing great things, Shakira. And as I speak on behalf of our production company, we are so proud to have you as our cast member. And, you know, and you just, you know, you complete us.
Best relationship ever.
Yeah, really. Oh, isn't that funny? But I couldn't think of another way. But it's true. You're just, you're such a part of our family. And we really appreciate everything that you do for us and with us.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that is completely mutual. And I think that, you know, as many times as I mean, Jason's been on the podcast, Christina's been here, you're here now. I constantly say, like, this relationship between Somme TV and Shakira, it began before the events of this year. And I think that that's a testimony to kind of the vision that you guys have had for the company, that, you know, it's about bringing people that will bring other people into wine. You know, that it's you can have a man that isn't charismatic and he might have more knowledge than somebody else, but if he's boring, he's not going to get people into wine. Same with a woman, same with a woman of color, same with a man of color, same with anything. And that sometimes it does, I mean, this world has a bunch of barriers and obstacles to everyone, quite honestly, that isn't a white male, and that's not an attack on white men. It's just the truth. But I think that in so many of the people involved in Somme TV, you've been able to see that, like, there's a rejection of it and where talent just isn't denied. And it's celebrated, it's nurtured, people are valued, there's equity, there's a voice, there's agency. And that's something that I'm grateful for and why I am very proud to be a part of the Somme TV family that is truly a family. I hate that, you know, you say that and people think it sounds so cliche, but I'm like, no, you should hang out in the living room with us.
Yeah.
We actually are like a big family. And I mean, we shared some great meals. We did a lot in 3 days, four days, by the way.
Yes, we did.
But I thought that, you know, in talking about, you know, we've touched a lot on the spirit of Sonoma and the people and the farmers, and even in eating, you know, I'm very much about dining well. dining well, eating well. I'm not sure if that's grammatically correct. My mom will listen to this and tell me. but, you know, even to go to some of the best restaurants and to see literally a garden on the rooftop, you know, where the produce mm-hmm. that is going to be a part of your hot plate is, of your hot pot, is being grown right around you. You know, when we went to Paul Hobbs, our meal was so in sync with what was in season, what was around, and it was just simple, good food. And I think simple and good, and undeniably simple and good, really embodies Sonoma and the wines and in everything. And something I wanted to touch on was, in all the interviews we did, when I asked, you know, winemakers, vineyard owners, vineyard managers, what's the main thing they want people to understand about Sonoma and this year's vintage of wines? And it was overwhelmingly the same thing. Like, look, we don't want bad wine in a bottle. We take pride in making wine here and putting a quality bottle out to the public for consumption. So do not write these wines off because of what you saw in the news about a fire. If the wine isn't good, we won't sell it, but give these wines a chance and be fair and buy them and enjoy them, because a lot goes into them in a good vintage. Everything went into making good wines for this vintage. So I hope that we convey that.
Well, we know whatever is produced and whatever is bottled is going to be good, because that is the Sonoma way. It's actually
yeah.
the California way. It's actually the American way, but
yeah. I'm going to buy all of, like, literally everything that came out in 2020 I want to buy and just put in a time capsule, like, look, I made it through this year. And we definitely, you know, as we celebrate projects and things like this, we definitely, in the back of our minds and in our hearts, keep the memory of all the people that have lost their life this year and all the people that have lost their lives and their livelihood this year, and hope that the project that we've worked on together is just a small piece of paying homage to the hardworking people everywhere that, despite a pandemic, despite a natural disaster, still they persist. And I think that's beautiful.
It's very inspiring.
It really was. And I'm so excited to see it. I'm like, I was there, but still, I can't wait to see how it all comes out. I'm nervous. I always have a very hard time watching and listening to myself. I don't think I've ever said it on the podcast, but I actually cannot listen to the podcast if there's not another person around me, and I can't watch myself. So, like, I had to FaceTime my parents to watch the trailer. I don't know why, because I'm harsh on myself, and sometimes it's hard for me to watch or hear me without just focusing on the mistakes I've made. And I think that I've heard that from winemakers, why they don't drink their own wine sometimes is because they won't be fair to it.
And I know a lot of actors have the same issue.
Really? So
yeah.
I don't feel bad anymore then.
Yeah, no, it's a thing.
Cool.
Though I would like you to read me like bedtime stories every night because I love your voice so much.
Thank you.
You are a natural, Shakira. You're a natural.
Yes,
I
you really are.
I really do. I mean, this has been such an experience.
I don't think you have to try. I don't think you have to try. I just think it comes very naturally.
This has been such an incredible experience, though, to even be like, okay, my way of dealing with nervousness is to laugh. So you won't see a lot of it in the film, but there's a lot of me just cracking up at things. And it was all such a new experience. But again, I think that, you know, both of you on the set, the family that we worked with, all the people that we worked with, it all seemed, it made it so natural and so organic. And I just know that it would be impossible for that not to be conveyed in the final project. So I'm super excited to see that. And I cannot wait to see you both again and to talk about what our next adventure is going to be. You are literally two of the most talented and inspiring women that I know. And I believe that the universe doesn't make mistakes in bringing people together.
I agree.
And so this was supposed to happen. But I'm going to let you guys close and tell people what you want them to think of Crush, how you want them to view it, or whatever you want to close with. We'll do that. So who wants to go first, Diane or Christina?
I think Christina should close out with this.
Close out, Christina.
Yeah.
Crush to me, I mean, to me, it's a beautiful story of a family winery and positivity through hard times. And it's fun. It's something that takes, you know, the hard times of this year and makes it fun. And people keep going and Shakira just experiencing new things. It's always fun to watch people experience new things. And so, but yeah, it's just I have a special place in my heart for this project.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you ladies so, so much for being here with us today and for sharing and giving our listeners some insight into this amazing, amazing film that I just know they're going to love. Everyone's going to love it because it was really, really interesting and really exciting. And you're going to fall in love with the Murray family because they're just amazing. Art and I are going to have to do something again because I think we were like the frickin' frack road show. So we really hope that you guys enjoy it all. Until the next time, we're all together, guys.
Yes, can't wait. Can't wait.
Thank you guys so much this week for listening to A Glass for Every Palette. I know that this episode has you super stoked about my new show on SOM TV called Crush. So to make sure you don't miss out on the debut on December 18th, make sure you have your subscription. And while you're at it, it's a great Christmas gift for the wine lover in your life. And right now you can get your subscription for $49.99. So head on over to SOMTV.com and make sure you're signed up.